This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome to the One Was Had a Dream podcast. My name is Lee Finch, and as ever, we will be joined by Danny Baker. Later on, we will be joined by the AFC Wimbledon Academy manager, Michael Hamilton. He'll be coming on and talking and discussing all things about the Academy. In the meantime, I'll introduce Danny. Danny, how are we?
I'm absolutely brilliant, mate. Yeah, had a haircut. I was absolutely struggling last week. With the heat, it's been mad, and my hair gets crazy. And you've got a massive beard, obviously. My beard was driving me mental, so I was like, I need to get my hair cut. But yeah, feel pretty good. Feel relatively fresh. I went to Cheshire today, but I was at Mansfield last night.
The world of adventures, or
it is a world of adventures there, I can tell you. Saw a Colchester fan shirt. It was quite busy actually. Well, it was probably my wife works there. But yeah, it was probably about half full, but obviously got the little ones, only 8 months. So she looked at the penguins and looked at the lions, went on a little roller coastery thing. Yeah, it was absolutely wicked.
Nice. Yeah, I took my boy, he's 13 now, but when I took him, he was about 4 or 5. And we queued for an hour and a half to get on Vampire. Got to the front and he weren't big enough.
Oh, so no.
That was a bit of a killer.
Yeah, so an hour and a half, he wasn't big enough.
Oh, no, yeah, he got right to the front and then they measured it. I swear I measured him at the start and I thought he was fine. But
like that Viking Greenford goalkeeper who couldn't touch the crossbar. Yeah, yeah. That and was an hour and a half.
Well, they bring out the metal thing, don't they? The metal
judger,
whatever it's called. And then
and you're kind of trying to get on tiptoes, but not really.
But yeah, an hour and a half. He was actually quite sweet about it. If I took him now, I think he'd be screwing and going mad that I'm waiting in queue for an hour and a half. But see, talking about summer, I love this weather. It's really nice, brilliant, brilliant. But I keep getting bitten by I don't know what they are, but I don't know if you're the same. But I've got one leg is literally just
they're called your wife, Lee. They just that's what they normally are. Yeah, they're just basically around biting people.
The wife, yeah. She's...
Yeah. It is horrible, isn't it? I mean, it's one of these things that we kind of it's typical English, isn't it? I'm a cricket fan, so I play obviously a lot of cricket in the summer, and it's sort of you want it warm, but you don't want it too warm. It's kind of like you've got a 5 degree grace. You want it roughly between 15 and 20, bit of a chill, bit of shade. And I played cricket Saturday. It was 35 degrees. And I was like, oh my God. 3.5 hours was in the field. It was horrendous.
Do you not get bored?
No. But it was a difficult because obviously I normally go to watch Wimbledon games, but because it's near the end of the cricket season, it all gets a bit interesting. So I kind of played. No, I love it. I absolutely love it. But it is a bit annoying missing the game.
Cricket's all right if you're batting, and then once you're out, it's boring, isn't it? Waiting for everyone else to get out.
For you, then, it's a long time waiting, isn't it, I suppose?
Well, no, I used to open the batting, to be fair.
Of course you did,
hours, come out, bat held high.
Yeah. 28 off 188 balls, killed bowling. The game for everybody, walked home.
Bowling was medium fast.
Medium poor.
To be fair, I was a wicket keeper.
Oh, don't get on with this.
No, I was pretty good.
I don't hear anymore.
I was good. I was a good wicket keeper, to be fair.
Well, you sound like it. You sound like you've got it all bases covered by the sounds of it.
The bald Freddie Flintoff, they used to call me.
Wow. So. There we are. The bearded Andrew Strauss.
Yeah, right. Anyway, shall we get our guest on and speak?
Why not?
Wimbledon. So our guest is, as I said, the AFC Wimbledon Academy Manager, Michael Hamilton. Michael, how are we? You okay?
Evening, guys. I'm well, thank you. How are you guys?
Very well.
Mike, what's your cricket like, mate?
I was going to say, I agree. When you're batting, it's okay. But yeah, once you've been bowled out, the rest of the game, yeah, you kind of forget about it.
Yeah, it's quite boring, isn't it, really? Cricket.
Guys, can I get something off my chest? I've been talking about it all day and I'm interested in Mike's opinion. It is about football. So I went up to Mansfield yesterday. And well done to all the Wimbledon fans who went up there. Good to see so many of Michael's academy playing. It's a broad question, but I'll give you a bit of context. Is there too many red cards in football? And the reason why I say this is that we went up the game yesterday. Gunter got sent off, which was, I don't know if you've seen it, was a little bit, I thought it was quite soft. But the game was dead from that point on. Me and Dad, we drove 3.5 hours up, 3.5 hours back. We're in a cost of living crisis, so people not being able to afford stuff. Are we at a point now where red cards, I think fans want to see a more competitive game rather than goals, goals, goals. Are we in a position now where we need to have less red cards? And obviously, I'm going to direct it at Mike. It must be challenging for you when you're trying to promote honest integrity, you know, you playing, you know, high performance, but yet at the same time, the dark arts means you have to kind of give people awareness of it. So the question to you, Mike, straight away is there too many red cards?
Yeah, I think the level of officiating has definitely dropped. I saw an interview yesterday, Nigel Pearson, and anyone that watched the Tottenham-Chelsea game at the weekend would have seen there's probably one or two decisions there that were really questionable. And away teams, we played Stevenage on Saturday, and we eventually won 5-0, but at 0-0, about 10 minutes in, one of our players had gone through in the box, and he's been fouled, but because he stays on his feet,
yeah,
but he then hits the shot off balance, the ref doesn't give a pen. So then you're in a situation where you don't teach the boys to go down, but those are the dark arts, right? So by trying to be honest, you don't get a decision that you deserve. If we'd gone in and lost that game 1-0 or something, then it adds a different context.
But do you feel like it's, I agree, by the way. I thought the referee at Mansfield was pretty poor. And anyone who was there would probably agree with me. But at the same time, is the game doing fans justice when it costs a lot? I mean, like I said, me and my dad going up, having a bit, we literally, there was nowhere to eat in Mansfield with a burger. Driving up, driving back, it's probably the best part of 150 quid. It just seems to me that a yellow card for taking your shirt off, celebrating a goal, ridiculous. Having a guy, two guys, and I bring in the Palace game. The Palace Liverpool game with Nunes getting sent off. That is heads touching. That's not a headbutt. We all know if it's a headbutt, the guy's got claret and he's going off for all fortnight. It's just, are we getting to the point now where it's going to become so soft that almost, I remember when I was younger, red cards were quite rare and you had to do something pretty dreadful to do it. Nowadays, I mean, Lee Tomlin got sent off, in 15 seconds again for Doncaster in the first game? One because he made a foul and one because he just flicked the ball through the bloke's legs. So it's kind of like,
wrong.
What do you mean it's wrong?
Well, Lee Tomlin didn't get sent off for a foul. He got sent off for kicking the ball away.
Yeah.
Then he got sent off for dissent to the referee.
Okay. So, but what I mean is you can get sent off for scoring a goal and taking your shirt off and at a throw-in, just kicking the ball away, that's the same as cutting a guy down one-on-one or doing a horrendously bad tackle. It just doesn't, for me, I feel like there's something in the middle that is challenging. And again, like we go back to what Mike was saying, it's a real difficult one where you're trying to educate and teach people to be strong. Like David Fisher yesterday, example, was on the wing. I know he's one of Michael's lot. He was being really strong and honest, went for a good tackle, went in. Had he gone down, we could have got a free kick in a good position. But boys, too honest, because that's how you should play the game. So I personally feel like with how much it's costing to go to football, I went yesterday and at half time, I might as well gone home. I said, it's going to be 5-2. It's 2-2. The game's dead.
I disagree with what you're saying, Danny. I don't think adults, professional level, I think the red card, Gunter got a red card. I think it's very soft. I think if he has stayed down, clutching his face when the guy has kicked the ball at him, which he possibly should have done. Again, he's jumped back up and pushed the guy. It shouldn't have been a red. But then, as you said, like Tomlin's been sent off because he's kicked the ball away. Where'd you do? If you're 1-0 up in the corner and you boot the ball miles, you should be getting booked for that kind of thing. And that's the second book and you're off. I think at academy level, I don't know if Michael agrees with me on this, is my son played a game of football. He played a year up and he's a goalkeeper. He came running out of his goal. Kid took the ball around him. He clattered into him. There was a defender, but clattered into him. He got sent off and his team ended up losing 13-0 at under 14s level, that was. And I said he played up a year, played under 14s and got sent off, which I don't think. But as you said, the Nunes thing is, for me, is not, do you know what I mean? You can't be doing that on a foot pitch where you turn around and you put your head towards someone.
It's just difficult on the fact that with the Nunes one in particular, if you watch, there's the clips. Anderson is at him constantly, like constantly nudging him and nudging him and nudging him. I know there's this word shithousery. And it's just, it's so frustrating because obviously you're there to watch a spectacle. You know, me and my dad, like I said, we were looking forward to it. We left at 2 o'clock, went all the way up and we've gone up there. And basically the guy went down. It's not a headbutt. It's nothing in it. But the whole game's dead for all of the home fans who are loving it. We've come a long way. And it just seems to be like, for me, like if he kicks the ball away, don't send him off. Just go, you've got 5 minutes here. Later. It's just boring. Go away. Have 5 minutes off. And then that way, it stops him doing it.
Gunner's got to be smart enough to
oh, yeah. I'm not.
Do you know what
I'm
mean?
Not,
to stay down. Yeah. He's just had the ball booted at him.
I'm not excluding him from blame. All I'm saying is that is not violent conduct. But he is not going to be in a world of trouble. And if he's headbutted him badly, fair enough. But it just seems to be, everything. So it's so soft that it's just, it's becoming every game. There's potentially a red card in every game, and that just seems ridiculous.
I get that. And the game is coming soft, and sometimes I can't stand watching it. Do you know what I mean? I don't like watching some games because they are too soft. But I've got to say, the Chelsea Spurs game the other day, I really enjoyed watching. I really enjoyed the fact there was a little bit of needle, there was a little bit of ag. Do you know what I mean? It was a London derby, it was tackles flying in. It means something.
See it though, Lee. This is the problem. That's exactly what we as fans are after. But if you're very, very tight on what is yellows and what is reds, what eventually happens is that
you
can't
just
carry
need
on.
Consistency from referees, Dan. If yeah. people are wondering why Michael's not jumping in or saying anything, unfortunately...
He hates refs. He can't talk about it.
Coming back in now. We lost him on the feed. So, if you are wondering why me and Danny are taking up all the time on here, it's because we lost Michael on the feed, but he's joining us back again now. Danny, as we're saying... I want to see that needle in the games. What I want to see, though, from referees is consistency. I want to see consistency from referees that they give it. Like the referee yesterday, one point there was a throw-in to Mansfield and it went off, hit the corner flag and went off. The guy's taken it 15 yards up the pitch, got away with it. We've tried to do the same and he's given us a foul throw and they've got the throw. It's ridiculous. Michael, I don't know if you heard what I said regarding adults football and youth football. My boy was a goalkeeper. He played a year up himself. Came running out of his box, halfway line, going to kick the ball, took out the player as well, and got sent off in an under-14s game of football. The game ended up finishing 13-0. And we said to the ref, like, you've literally now just ruined that game. Them kids might not come back and play football again. I think it's I think kids level, I think there should be more talking at youth level, talking to 18-year-olds, 19-year-olds, even at academy level, the ref should be talking to them. And maybe it should be a ref that they know, like, especially within London and stuff. I don't know what you think regarding that.
No, I agree. I think the biggest frustration with youth football specifically, I agree. And with the academy boys, we do have a rule where if someone's about to get sent off, we're asked to sub a player off. So it's more of a sin bin. But I suppose, the biggest frustration is consistency. Like you said, if you look at some of the challenges that Ayoub receives, and then it makes it more frustrating when, a Chris Gunter situation happens. It's just the consistency or lack of that is the most frustrating bit. But I agree, it does. At least the conversations that we've had in the academy, have we as developers been a little bit naive in the past? Do you start to teach the young men, the dark arts? You see it in the Premiership, don't you, where, your Harry Kanes and your Sterlings are almost looking for contact and they go down before contact's made. So it's definitely a conversation that has come up, and I suppose if you don't make players aware of it, then you're going to lose out at some stage. And that sounds crazy, but like I said at the weekend, we had a player go through early on, he gets taken out. Well, yeah, he gets taken out, but stayed on his feet, so he doesn't get the foul. But if he went down, he would have got a pen. It's okay because we won 5-0. But if the result is different, then yeah, that decision comes back and bites you.
Mike, just on that, I'm really, really pleased that you're joining us. How important, I'm a school teacher, if you didn't know, and we always talk about, it's not about winning or losing, it's about the process. At what point in the academy do you feel that it's almost, the process is important, but you get to a point where football is a results game? At what point, where do you find that tipping point where it goes from process to we actually need to win this game of football, and how are we going to find a way to win as opposed to let's do the right things well? Where do you feel that tipping point is?
It's a good question, and one that continuously comes up in development. I don't see winning as not developing. No one plays a game of football, or no one plays sport, especially at our level where, in theory, you're talking about elite young players in youth football. No one plays football to lose. When they're younger, we do speak about winning, but winning is about applying yourself and making sure you do all the things that you need to do to give that, if accumulated, should equal to a positive result, So me, once I cross the white line, make sure I give 100%. If I've got development targets, working towards those, making sure I really attack what success looks like today. It's not about the score line, but what does happen as the boys get older is the score line does become more of a priority, especially when you enter leagues and tournaments. And like we said, you don't play football to lose. No one does. It's important whilst they're young, you keep the fun element and, you keep their engagement and enjoyment. But they need to, we do ask boys to be winners, make sure you conduct yourself the right way. Make sure you give 100%. Make sure you leave today having attacked your development targets and applied yourself the right way. And we feel over time, an accumulation of these little processes, of these little bricks, should over time result to winning.
Because that's what I was going to say, Michael, because obviously if, say, Jack Redoni, for example, he started in our youth team at 8 years old, was it? I think it was, or I think it was between 8 and 12 that he started in the youth team. So we give him a platform, yeah. We teach him processes, we try and teach him to develop as a human being as well as a footballer. And then he goes off to, say, Huddersfield, where they have a totally different way of dealing with things and saying, like, well, now you have to dive if you get clipped in the box. You have to kick the ball away. We don't, How is that? How do you go about with players like that? Do you just go, that's part and parcel of football nowadays?
Well, unfortunately, it's part of the game, right? We're talking about it and it is part of the game. And our job is to prepare boys for the end game. The skill of the coach and the skill of the program is to make sure it's done at the right times. What we feel is by, when we talk about applying yourself the right way and, having manners and working hard, we don't do that to... We feel by doing those things actually increases the chances of you becoming a footballer increases the chances of you developing the way you need to. Ultimately, the boys in our 18s now could be in the first team within the next 6, 12, 18 months. So, we would be very naive and we would almost be doing them a disservice if we weren't preparing them for what that looks like.
Great stuff. Michael, for the people that are listening now and don't know too much about yourself, where is your background? Like, where have you come from with regards to football? And tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, I've been actually at Wimbledon for coming up to 14 years now. I've done almost every role possible in the youth development programme. I've been the academy manager for the last 3 years. Prior to that, I was head of coaching for about 2 years. And prior to that, I was under-16s coach. So in my age group, I would have had Sars Udagidi, Joseph Bursic, Anthony Hartigan. So I've kind of done almost every role within the academy. If I rewind even further, when I was, a young man leaving school and, had aspirations to be a footballer, I was around my early 20s when I wanted to. So I got into coaching straight away and quite early I was afforded the opportunity to go and develop and work at Millwall. So I used to work at Millwall and Wimbledon initially. And then when Wimbledon became a football league club in 2011, I obviously had to make a decision to only work with one club due to a conflict of interest, and I chose Wimbledon. And I've been here ever since full time. And like I said, I've worked various different roles, and I've been academy manager now for, just coming up to 3 years.
And what does an academy manager do? Obviously, we've seen you on the TV recently on the One Shot program on Sky, which was great. But I'm just curious as to, as an example, are you the person that decides, right, you know what, I'm going to put forward to the manager these five names who I think are good enough? I'm just loosely saying, what is your day to day? What is your ultimate responsibilities?
Yeah, ultimately, my responsibility is the development program and everything that entails in the academy. So we have 130 odd boys signed from under nines up to under 18s. And my job is to oversee the different departments within the academy, to manage the staff within that, and to make sure that we're all working towards and achieving our objective. So in the academy, you'd have your football inside. So you've got your football coaches, you've got your scouts, you'd have your performance analyst, you'd have your medical and sports science provision. You've also got life skills and holistic support. So, you know, you talk about personal development and other areas like that. So it entails quite a lot. A year and a half ago, I also took on the role as loans manager. So I started looking after the boys that were transitioning from the academy into the senior game. So I started to look after their development program and overseeing their loans. And ultimately, the way I articulate is, anything that goes wrong, I'm responsible for. And it's my job to manage the staff to the best of my capabilities, to ensure they're the best staff that they can be, to ensure that they run their part of the academy as well as they can. At the end of it, the under-18s, the under-23s, that's the tip of the iceberg, so to speak. And when it comes down to decisions and stuff like that, ultimately it falls on my shoulders. But that doesn't mean to say I'm the sole decision maker. But I'm personally responsible for the performance or lack of performance for the academy.
Great stuff. My question I've got for you regarding the changes that have recently happened. How hard have you found that the changes? Obviously, Robbo was the academy manager as well for 19 years to become the first team manager. Unfortunately, that didn't work as well. You said earlier regarding Pierce, who then now has moved to Reading. How hard has it been to lose not just colleagues but friends as well, who have now moved on to other stuff? Or is it just again part and parcel of football that people will move on at a youth team level?
The one consistent in football is that something's going to change, and that's what I try to voice with all the staff, you know. So it's no point getting frustrated or annoyed by it, because at some stage something is going to change. Obviously with Robbo and James Oliver Pierce and, you know, other senior staff, it's not very regularly that you get a group of people that spent so long together. So it was a little bit of a shock. The new 18s coach, Simon Clark, who's came in and, you know, doing a good job at the moment, but that's the first time in forever. This has thrown different challenges. It's quite uncommon to have a group of people that have been together for so long. But Mark Robinson, he hasn't been part of the academy for about 3 years. No one wants to see that. But from an academy perspective, I suppose the core management group haven't changed for the last couple of years.
And how does it work in terms of, you spoke about recruitment? Obviously, you've got boys who are as young as 8, 9, 10, and girls. And then you've got people going all the way up to the 18s. If a parent's listening, what is the recruitment process? Is it a case of they contact and they send a video? I mean, you've seen the videos on YouTube, 150,000 people going, look how great I am. Here's a highlight of me playing one game of football where I did a Cruyff turn and I passed it. Or is it, in cricket, there's a lot of analysis around statistics. Obviously, cricket been a lot easier statistically. How does a club at Wimbledon recruit?
Good question. We recruit via our contacts and our group of staff. So we've got Ben Fossini, who's the head of talent ID at the academy. He's, I suppose, leads on the identification stage, but using all our contacts and our resources, you know, you do get players proposed to you and recommendations and stuff, and then it's within our what we do. We bring it back to the table and, you know, align it with what we need, what we don't need. Is that something we're looking for? And then it all starts to come out. What we do have is a team of 14 volunteer scouts that work across London. So they're at games every weekend, 2-3 games a week. And alongside that, you know, you do build a reputation and contacts within the game. So, you know, if Chelsea are releasing players, you know, they'll contact us and say, Mike, you know, I think these are players that might be worth a look. Ultimately, when players do get released, they're getting released for a reason. So it's not to say just because they're coming from Club X, they're going to be better than what we've got. And the problem with data and stuff like that is it's all output related, isn't it? So
yeah, of course, yeah.
So has made how many shots or goals he's made. But what data doesn't measure is personality and grit and resilience and stuff like that, which is stuff that we hold really highly here in the academy. So you can't really go off data and you can't really go off recordings. Like I said, I always say no one ever sends you a bad video of them playing football, do they? And if I if I pick my best bits together, I'll look after decent myself. So it's what you do is you over time you build contacts, you know, people that you trust. Occasionally you do get, you know, an agent or a scout who promises you the next best thing. And I suppose what, you know, it's within our interest to go, okay, if he's as good, if you're saying you've got 10 players, send in your best one and then we'll judge you off that. Because if your best one's nowhere near it, then, you know, it probably says a lot about the others. So, yeah, it can be quite messy and chaotic, but it's also important to remember, you know, we feel we've got a good programme here. We feel we've got talented boys and, you know, it's very easy to look outside and, you know, how do we recruit and stuff. But, you know, there's also a huge tariff within the academy of maximising who we have in the building already. Like I said, if a player's getting relegated, not relegated, so if a player's getting released, there's a reason why he's getting released. And we trust our programme. You know, we have belief in our players. Yeah, we sign players, and I can give you the numbers of the amount of trialists and players that we've signed over the last 12 months. But what's probably more of a priority for us is that we recognise and we develop and maximise the players that we've already got in the building. You know, so you have Jack Currys, who's been here since 8-9. Rudy was there since 12. Ayoub, 12. If along the pathway, Arsenal came in and said, oh, you know, I don't know, Ayoub's 15, and they say we've got a player who's 15 and just, you know, we're releasing him, but he does this, that and the other. What does that say about our Ayoubs or our Jack Currys or our Anthony Harkin? So, you know, we
probably... Say that honestly, Mike. Are they... Will club come up and say, we're releasing this guy, I'll tell you the reason why, is he hasn't got a right foot or he is a hothead. Do they... When a player is released and they put them forward, do they... Is the quality of feedback that you're given or the information, is it reliable or is it often like, do you know what, we want to give the kid a game? So you have to kind of... Do you understand what I'm trying to get at?
It's trying
to...
Yeah.
How is it? Is it quite honest? Is there quite an honest fraternity within, if you're releasing somebody and Stephen is coming, would you be honest enough to say, do you know what, he's not fit enough? Or would you be like, well, actually, no, he's got a good, bit like a reference, he's got a good left foot, he works hard, etc. Is there quite a good honesty amongst the academies?
Yes, because ultimately, especially in football, you're judged on your reputation, right? So if Chelsea sent me three players, if someone from Chelsea sent me three players and we've not signed any, then I'm not listening to the fourth or fifth one, am I? So no. People have to be, it's within everyone's best interest, including the players, I must highlight, not to waste anyone's time and be completely honest. Every academy looks for something different. Some academies do straight away, if a boy has been released from a Cat 1, Cat 2, we'll just sign him straight away, which is fair enough, if that's their ethos. But we're not like that. So it is based on the strength of your relationships and who you're talking to. But yeah, it's within everyone's best interest to be as honest as possible for the benefit of everyone.
Michael, how do you keep, say, players' feet on the ground? Because obviously everyone watches the TV now and you the money that's going into football. One of the biggest things I had when I was coaching youth level, like proper low level coaching, and some of the parents I had to deal with coaching was just off the scale. And this was under 13 Sunday football. How do you deal with that? And a lot of footballers are young footballers now, even have agents. How do you keep their expectations in line just to say, look, this kid's going to be, it could be good, but he needs to do this. Or is it just straight, right? If they don't follow our processes or procedures, then we don't want them at Wimbledon.
Yeah, we do have processes that if they're not followed, we don't want them. You know, you one thing I think as an academy manager and as a development program is you have to have the control. And that's not me trying to be dictatorship or anything like that. But, you know, we feel we're good enough, we're strong enough, we have a proven track record that, you know, we feel we do the right things. That is not to say that we won't get the player to where he hopes he can get to. And, you know, no one would be happier if he goes on and, you know, plays for Real Madrid and, you know, all of that. You know, no one would be happier, but you're not there yet. So, you know, whilst you're here, whilst you're registered with us, you follow our program. The best way for that to come across is you need to educate the players, you need to educate the parents, and you need to educate the agents. You know, if that's a player's support network, then everyone needs to be aligned with where that player is at. Now, the thing with football, everyone thinks they're an expert, and, you know, you do get your mum and dad going, oh, you know, yeah. I think this is better.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, well, what players have you developed? And it's not as straight as that, but you kind of have to get around. Look, you're his mummy's dad. You know, he's your baby, you know, and you love him more than anything. And in your eyes, he's the best thing ever, which is fair enough. And we appreciate that. However, for his football, what you're judged by as a parent is how he applies himself. You know, is he enjoying his football? Does he give it everything? Does he come in and shake people's hands? And if he's a good person, as a parent, that's what you're going to be judged on. You're not judged on if he's a good player. Let us deal with the player sides. And even when he plays his football, you know, when he jumps in the car, don't say you played good. Don't say you played rubbish. Don't talk about his football. Just say, did you enjoy yourself? Did you work hard? What did you learn today? You know, what could you have done better? Make it more question-based. Do not give your opinion, because you could undo a lot of the development and stuff that we're trying to do behind closed doors. You could really work against some of the messages that he's getting. And that's not what it's about, you know. And we try and be 100% honest. Like I said, a lot of you see a lot of parents play the game for their son or for their daughter.
Oh, that TV show, Mike, on Sky. Forgive me for cutting in, but I was watching it the other day, and the guy was doing my nutting. The guy who had the kid, and for the guys who don't know, there's this program on Sky which has got women on it and a couple of episodes, and the dad is super super keen. And I think he ends up taking the kid to Portugal. I haven't seen the last episode, but it must be really difficult. Like I said, I mean, like I said, I've been a Wimbledon fan for ages at Wenham Mansfield, and social media has been mental after the last game. We've had a player, you know, sent off, managing expectations, people understanding the holistic approach to the game. It must be very, very difficult when you've got a parent in front of you, like you said, whose son is God's gift. What are the key learnings or the key lessons that you can give these parents? Like, I know, like you said about the reason why I ask it is I have the exact same question, the exact same conversation with my kids. I've run a first 11 cricket at my school, and every parent, don't give them any information. There's clarity. We have a long meeting. This is how we're going to go about our cricket. This is our identity. Do you buy into the identity? And you have all that conversation. What are the key learnings, though, that you try and put across to parents in particular?
Michael, before you answer that, I just want to... My boy was at Wimbledon Academy for a year, I think, before he had to move away. And I got told off by the Wimbledon coaches for coaching on the sideline to my boy, because he's a goalkeeper. He was only, like, what, 10, 11? And I was, Jack, come on, push up, get out, speak and all that. And they said, look, Lee, can you... be quiet on the sideline, please, because he needs to make his own decisions and mistakes. I got told off.
No, you do get it. You watch boys at the weekend, and you know they play a pass, and then they look over to the parents' side, and you're like, older than me. You know what's going on here, or you know, there's so many horror stories, and I don't necessarily mean Wimbledon. I mean just in football. So yeah. You know, like the story you said with the Portuguese dad and son, you know, and he's there saying there's no pressure on him, you know, there's no pressure, we want him to enjoy it, but we're moving the whole family across to Portugal, and it's like, oh my, you know, so you've got to educate the parents, and there comes, you know, and what that looks like is some of your conversations have got to be away from the kid. You know, you've got to be honest and open, you've got to let them see that everything you're saying and doing is within the best in the intentions, and you know, we're all in it together, and collaboratively we can probably get, you know, Joe Bloggs to where he wants to get to, but you have to be honest. But there does come a time when if the parent isn't receiving these messages and, you know, isn't doing their side of the bargain, then, you know, there comes a time when you go, well, is this working for us? Because especially for us as an academy, you know, we know what we're not. You know, we're not a Cat One, we're not an Arsenal, we're not a Chelsea, but we are what we are, and we embrace it, and we try and be more Wimbledon. And what we can't have is people around the place who are diluting our messages, around the place who are diluting our environment and our culture. So, you know, we have had it in the past. We've had to have uncomfortable conversations with parents because we're saying, look, we're trying here, and we try to put things in place, but it's just not working. And what ends up happening is you do end up coming to an agreement where, you know, a parent just says, look, okay, look, I'm gonna step away and, you know, not come and watch so-and-so's game or something. And I need to highlight, we're not working against anyone. We're trying to make sure that we put a player in the centre, you know, we put a player in the middle of it all and go, right, what's best for him? And as a parent, your role is to make sure, you know, the messages are consistent. You're talking about him and how he applies himself from a personal perspective. Leave the football to us. We wouldn't tell you how to be a parent, you know, but when it comes to football and development, trust me, whilst you think you're being helpful and whilst you think you're being a positive influence, you know, there's a potential here that you're having the complete opposite impact.
Michael, I have not a big issue with academies. I have like slight issues with, I live in Southend, and Southend have their academy team, which are quite a decent side. And then under that, they have like about five or six different academies, like shadow squad reserves. And then you talk to the parents like on a Sunday or stuff, and you see them, they're like, oh, my boy's at Southend. And you ask them and they go, he's the shadow squad. We pay 40 quid a month to play. And it's like, well, your son's not really in the academy then. And also you look at stuff across the board with Chelsea. Chelsea have, what, 100 players in their academy, and they just stockpile players. How do you deal with that as a Wimbledon academy, where you're trying to get the best players, but you're trying to compete against, now, like, there's academies, not like football, there's football academies being run by ex-players, there's coaches now who have just got their coach level one badge trying to open a soccer school, soccer academy. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. It's just blown up. For when I was a kid, there was literally no academy. You had one elite academy, and you didn't really join that until you were, what, under 14s, under 15s. Like, people like John Terry and people like that were playing for Senrabs and Brimsdown Rovers until they got spotted at an age where they could be more into an adult game. How do we compete against all that kind of stuff that goes on?
Official academies are licenses granted by the Football League and Premier League. So, like you said, if you're paying for football, you're not in an official academy. What does sit under a lot of academies and what is an arm of each club is, you know, the community section and the foundation section, which is more soccer schools. The word academy has, it's thrown around so much and it's overused. When you break it down, there can be no more than 92 academies in this country, you know, plus maybe one or two extra because, you know, clubs have been relegated to the conference and, you know, they're trying to work their way back up. But yeah, if I just give you a ballpark, you know, there are no more than 95, 96 professional academies in this country. However, a lot of people attach the word academy to what they do. And like you said, they do sell dreams. I know there's a lot of negative press coming up regarding academies, but I also feel, you know, there's a lot of positive stuff that that academies do if done right. The professional academies, I need to highlight, I think do things the right way, and they do give boys the experiences and the memories that will live with them forever. And you know, alongside that, there is a lot of holistic development that goes into players outside of football. So, you know, we aren't selling boys' dreams. We're not making promises. But what we are saying is, when you enter the academy, you will leave at some stage. You'll either go into the first team and leave the academy and you would have fulfilled your aspirations of being a professional footballer. You'll either get sold and you'll go on and, you know, you take on the next step of your career, or at some stage you will be released. And, you know, by signing this bit of paper, everyone agrees that at some, you know, you're going to go down one of these three routes. Development isn't linear. If you get released, it's not the end of the world. But what I can promise you is, if you're here for 1 year, 3 years or 10 years, you're going to have memories and experiences that you wouldn't have outside of professional academies. You're going to receive elite development and elite coaching. You're going to receive holistic development and holistic coaching. And like I always say to a player and a parent, when we sign a player, my job isn't to make your son a professional footballer. My job is to give your son the best environment possible to maximize his potential. And if that lasts for 18 months, as long as we're honest along the way, we have our processes in place, we're having good, honest conversations, and we do everything outside to make sure, you know, he's working towards his targets and we're, you know, we're trying to stretch him in his development, I'm happy with that. Your responsibility as a parent is to make sure he comes in, attacks his goals, you know, and grabs the opportunity. And football isn't for everyone. You know, there's 92 football clubs that play professional football on a weekend. That's what, 11 players each team. I'm testing myself here. That's less than 2,000 players that play professional football on a weekend. But there's millions of boys that want to be footballers. Mm. You know, if I apply for Harvard, I've got a 96% chance of not even getting of my application not being processed. You know, if it was easy, everyone would do it. Yep. So you are almost trying to achieve the unattainable, but that's what you sign up for. You know, especially your Cat Ones, your Chelsea's and your Man United, you know, some of the experiences they take their boys to countries and to places that the boys didn't even know existed. And for some of these boys, it's the only time they ever go to these places in their life. You know, how amazing is that? So I do know academy football gets a negative press at times, but there's so much positive stuff that we do. You know,
is it quite tricky, Mike, in terms of when you've got a good player, and obviously that let's use Ben Cox as example. Ben Cox, who's the keeper, went to Brentford.
Matthew Cox.
Sorry, Ben Cox. I went to school with. There you are. That's awkward. Yeah. But yeah, so someone like Matthew Cox, or you've got there's a whole host of other guys who are there. It must be a weird sort of balancing act where you've got a young keeper or a young player, and you're like, wow, I've put a lot of investment into a player, and you get him to the point where he can play first team football. I guess from your angle, it's kind of a weird one. You as an academy manager and us as a club, that end bit is quite interesting, because obviously you're desperate for them to play at the best level they possibly can, because it's a good outcome for you if they go and play for Brentford and they're worth a lot of money and they're on the bench in the Premier League. But your employer is AFC Wimbledon and they're not playing in the first team. Is it kind of a weird, is it a weird headspace when a player leaves your academy system to go to, I'm not saying a better academy, but an academy that is higher up in the pyramid? Is it a conflict of interest, or are you quite happy with that?
It's part of the job. So, you know, I've had honest conversations with the club, and I need to highlight the club aren't out to sell our best young players. They're not, but, you know, ultimately there's context that is needed in each situation. So if you use Matthew Cox as an, I'm just going to use him as an
example. No, absolutely, yeah.
If there's a young keeper in the first team doing as well as him, only one goalkeeper can play. If Matthew Cox wants to play now, then yeah, we have a decision to make. And yeah, the club's intention is never to sell our best youngsters. But again, similar to what I just said about, you know, the players, as part of the academy, we're going to release boys. We're going to stretch boys and push boys beyond their own beliefs and their own, you know, what they thought was possible. We're going to sell players along the way. Yeah. And alongside that, we're going to have boys like your Jack Currys, like your Ayuba Sells, who are going to make it. So, you know, we've actually sold, we can't publicise every player that we sell and stuff, but we've actually sold 5 players in the last 12 months from the academy. And a lot of people, you know, it's a shame. And I'm like, it is a shame. But at the same time, we've just signed 5.
But it's also a good feather in the cap for you, isn't it? That the work that you're doing has been lucrative enough for us to be an appetizing option. And like you said, that must bode well, because those 5 potential suitors come back again because they know that you're doing a good job. So it's kind of a weird one, isn't it? Where, yes, you're doing your job because they're better footballers. We don't get the end product per se, but down the line, the reputation precedes it, which is quite, it must be a really interesting headspace.
It is. And like you said, you know, we do get frustrated because we don't see the end product, you know, and that is frustrating. However, it says something about our program.
Yeah, absolutely.
Identified. If, I don't know, I'll just use, if X club are signing 2 or 3 of our players, then that it's within their best interest to maintain their relationship with us. So going back to your earlier question, you know, if they do release 2 or 3 players, now all of a sudden they might bring them back to us because they know, you know, we've got a good development model. So yes, it is frustrating. It's very frustrating, but it's part of the job. And, you know, when we did sell a Matthew Cox, and when we have sold, you know, Jack Rodoni or whoever, of course, your initial response is frustrating. However, we've also signed five boys on pro contracts. Jack Curry goes and scores in his debut. Mm-hmm. You know, if Jack Curry goes and does what he does week in, week out for the next year, wow, you know, what a talent we've got on our hands.
Yeah.
You know, we also know we've got other players that will come up. We also know in the next 12 months, we're going to lose some more players. We know that. But it's a measure of our program. The alternative is our players aren't getting identified by other clubs. The alternative is our players aren't good enough to be signed. So what does that say about our program? So, yeah, it's not something you welcome. It's not something, you know, you get excited about when you lose a player. But it's part of the industry and the role that we're in.
Mike, well, on the flip side of that, because obviously, as I said, with Matthew Cox and people like that, you must be sitting there proud that these players are now going on to Brentford. He's just signed a 6-year deal. I think he will pay for Plough Lane when he goes to Man U or someone like that in the future. Yeah. You've got Castle Dyne, who's now at Chelsea, who's doing really well. And proud of that. How frustrating is it from your point of view and the academy and the coaches that you hear fans giving players, like the youth team players, stick, like Anthony Hartigan, for example? I use him because he came on for 23 minutes last night and he got a little bit of stick from Wimbledon fans that he wasn't good enough. Do you find that part of the game really hard to, or again, is it just part of the game, or do you take that personally, that you think actually this kid is a decent footballer? I've seen him week in, week out, and fans are just obviously fickle football fans.
Yeah, in the most respectful way, there are a lot of fickle football fans, and that's not me being rude. You know,
I'm one of them. No, 100%. No, yeah, not being rude at all. Just go on Facebook.
You've got a player who's he makes a professional debut. He has to go make his professional appearance in front of thousands of people. He's going to make mistakes. He's going to have ups. He's going to have downs. But he's being judged every week. You know, he's in a team that, you know, I wouldn't say we're thriving each week. You know, and that's going to have an impact on his mental state and his confidence and stuff. And that has a knock-on effect on his performance. What I can say of Anthony is, you know, he was someone who absolutely 5-6 years ago loved the club. You know, 5-6 years ago, his aspirations were to go and lead this team out to Plough Lane. And, you know, you'll be pushed to find another 22-year-old in this country who's got 150 games or whatever under his belt. And he's not even peaked yet. You know, I was a bit disappointed too. Hear that he went to another League Two club, I'll be honest with you. But I do know at 24, 25, 26, you know, when he starts peaking, he could look very different. And that's not just the same with Anthony, that's the same. You know, Jack Curry's going to have a dip at some stage, you know. They're all going to have dips. Ayoub, you know, and it's part and parcel of the world that they're stepping into. But all I will say from a fan's perspective is, I promise you now, like all these boys, there's nothing more they want than to make you guys happy. You know, there's nothing more they want to than to hear you guys cheering on a weekend and to be representing the yellow and blue. But at the same time, you got to see what's around them. You know, you got to see the environment that they're in. And, you know, last season, there was a stage when Anthony was the most productive midfielder outside of the Premiership or something, you know. So that goes to show what can happen at a stage. But then, you know, a flick of a coin, form drops, confidence drops, and he's looking half the player. So it's a lot more complex than people think. Anthony was, you know, he made his debut at 17. You know, I think he's still one of the youngest debutants. So, the impact the fans can have, you know, needs to be considered. And, you know, these boys are learning on the job. They're learning in front of thousands of people, but I promise you, you know, if you give them nothing but positive vibes through the ups and through the downs, I really do think you'll get it back.
No, I totally agree. And I think, like, with the result against Mansfield, I think we just need to be patient that the fact that we have got a very young squad, even the players that we've got coming in on loan, people like Paris, people like that, this is the first time he's played men's football, and we have to be patient with these young kids, because we're not a massive club who can go out and spend loads of money. We have to have the Jack Currys. And I've met Jack Curry up in Hartlepool, and he absolutely loves it. He was singing along. He was loving every minute of it. And I think the only problem with men's football to academy football is patience. There isn't a lot of it, as you probably know.
I was just curious, Mike. Go on, mate. After you. Sorry, I'm buttoning. Go on.
No, patience. The one thing people haven't got, the one thing we'll judge by the weekend is the result, isn't it? And there was, you know, 2-3, you know, no one's stupid. Everyone knows what 2-3 bad results does, especially from a fan's perspective. But no, with the young players, we do need to be a little bit patient. And what you said there is spot on. What is also important, especially when you're developing young players, is that you surround them with experience and know-how, because it's not all going to be linear. And I felt, you know, without being rude, in the last 18 months or so, we've put kids in teams with kids and expected them to lead.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, totally
that's
agree.
That's not how it works. You know, that's not how it works. And, you know, the best environments have a mixture. The best environments do have, you know, have a few older heads, so to speak, who have been there, done that, can lead the boys, can, you know, add a different perspective, put their arm around them, also let them know when standards ain't been good enough. And that's how you maximise talent and potential.
Mike, just curious, I genuinely don't know, is it expensive to, like, have... So I know, like, you're talking about Jack Curry being with us since X amount. I mean, is it expensive if you were to track an under eight? And maybe you'll be able to elaborate. I wonder how many boys from an under eight would go all the way through to the end and then sign. Is there, like, you know, is it quite expensive for us as a club to monitor, support, train a boy from under eight up to 18? And are there many boys that go all the way through, or is it mainly a case of, right, under eight, then he'll go, and almost for someone to go from a very young age to the end seems incredible?
Yeah, I suppose it is. It adds up, doesn't it? Yeah. From a cap free perspective, I think it probably works at about, we've done this years ago, it could be between $5,000 and $8,000 a year per player, because we've got over 100 players in the academy. You know, so you multiply that by X, and yeah, it's 40, 50 grand,
isn't it?
Yeah, but then you think, you know, but then I could throw it at you, well, how much is a player who comes in and gets signed as a senior player and doesn't contribute, and then you know, so, you know, there is that perspective as well. Do many players make it all the way through? No, it's hard. But it does happen. So if you look at the current boys that we just signed on a pro contract, Marcel signed at 16, Ethan signed at 16, Hughes signed at 13, Josh signed at 15, Ben signed at 12. So that, you know, on the face of it, okay, well, a little bit older, but no, because we know in the group below, we have got a lot of, we've got an under 18s group at the moment that, you know, by the time it comes to their decision time and them getting pro contracts, a lot of them have been with us since 7 and 8, so it will look very, very different, I can promise you that. So it works in, it's not one rule, you know. No. there are different groups that look very different, and yes, within our best, you know, ideally we want boys that have been there since 7, 8 and all the way through, but like I said, you know, I just saw the under-18s, the England under-18s team, they're out in the tournament at the moment, and two of those boys were at Wimbledon, but the fans will probably never know that, because we lost them along the way. And that's the unfortunate thing. And ultimately, you know, if you go by the summer, we lost Archie Stevens and Leon Chiromi, two very talented young men. But now we have to replace them. You know, so now you're replacing them with players who are coming in at 15, 16, 17. And all of a sudden it looks like you're, okay, well, you're signing them when they're older. Well, no, the context is we had someone, but we lost them. But yeah, it's not one story, I suppose, and there's context required.
And how many in the squad, Mike?
It depends. With the 18s, we average about 16 to 20 players.
That's small.
Yeah, no, we try and go small, because we try and keep a pathway open so that younger boys can play up. Because it's important to see that, for them to see that there is a pathway, and we don't just talk it, we walk it as well.
Yeah, it's interesting.
With the 16s, yeah, you're probably looking at a group of, it can average, you know, but between 13 and 18 again, and 15 probably, yeah, but I suppose between 10 and 14. So it changes. And if we know, as example, we've got a really exciting under 15 left back, then we won't pit anyone in his way. We'll keep the pathway open so that we can keep stretching him and pushing him unless something special comes along. So it, you know, it does require context. At the same time, if you've got an under 18 striker, under 16 striker, under 15 striker, I mean, they're all quality. Well, then, you know, it's within our best interest to develop and maintain with them all. So, yeah, it's different. It's different for each position in each age group.
Well, I think I've got some questions from fans, but before I go on to them, I just want to, your point there regarding some players that have gone on that people might not have been aware of. And one of the big ones, I think, was for us, was Patrick Roberts. We had Patrick Roberts up until he was 14, and then he went to Fulham. Then he went to Man City, and he's been now at Celtic and now Sunderland. I think people should do research of the players that we've lost over the years through our academy, even as Wimbledon FC, just before the move, we had some. I think Zaha was with our youth team before the move to Milton Keynes. Do you know what I mean? So we've had some great, excellent players who have gone through our academy and left before they've made it, kind of thing.
Yeah, Kieran Gibbs. There's loads of players, and I'm not just saying it. If you ask anyone, apparently, like in South, especially South London, like Wimbledon were the prominent academy. I know it started to formalise in the early 90s, and you know it's all changed. But no, back in the day, Wimbledon were very prominent in youth development in London.
So I've got a couple of questions from fans. So the first one's from Harvey Everard, which is Matt Everard's son, which just blows my mind that Matt Everard's son is a Wimbledon fan. So he must be, what, 14th now? And yeah, it just blows my mind that Matt Everard, who I was cheering on, scoring goals for Wimbledon, his son now supports AFC Wimbledon. But he wanted to know, who is the biggest up and coming talent in our academy at the moment, if you can answer?
They're all quality. I can't answer that.
So that is a rough question.
Yeah, I can't answer that. But
do you see another 1, 2, 3 breaking through into the first team this season? Not the boys that are already part of the. Do you see them coming from the under 23s or under 18s? Do you see 1 or 2 breaking into that first team in the next year or two?
In the next year or two, yeah. In the next year or two, yes. I can't say they'll go in and stay in. I think they'll go in and feature and you know, play a part. But again, you know, they've all got a chance, and I'm not just saying it, you know. For me, the most important thing is that they attack the opportunity they got, and they maximise, you know, what's in front of them. But I honestly do feel, you know, if I said, you know, if you look at Ben Mason, and I don't think you mind me saying this, he was a player who every year got told, Ben, if you don't work on this and you don't work on that, you know, it's going to be tricky for you. You know, and every single year he just got given a target, he got dangled a carrot. And the young boys absolutely smashed his targets. And, you know, on days where games and sessions were being cancelled, he was out in the park, you know, in the snow with sleds on his back, run like absolutely. And I promise you, like, doing everything and more, doing research into how he can better recover after games and what he needs to eat in between games, because he's got only 48 hours and not 2, 3, 4 days. Like, and he was just an absolute learner, and it accumulated to him last year captaining the under 18s to their first ever title. And if you speak to any boy about Ben, you know, Ben was he's a cultural architect, but his development wasn't always linear. So, you know, when I say it's down to boys to apply themselves and attack their goals, I do mean it. You know, so you know, we could have an under 13 who's absolutely quality on the pitch, but if his attitude's wrong, you know, by the time he's 16, we could be having a very different conversation.
Great stuff. George Brown asks, what goes into the process of selecting under 18s who get their pro contracts?
Yeah, so what we do along the whole pathway, so this includes, I'll go down to under 9s, is every 6 weeks or so we sit down and we just, you know, we review the players, we map out potential squads, and you know what players are struggling, what players are doing well, what players need to do to kick on. So it's a continual process. Of course, it intensifies when they get to under 18s, because you know, you're talking about a pro contract, but it's not a decision of one person. You know, it's not just how you feel in the day. There is a process that goes in place that's probably started 2, 3, 4 years ago. Alongside that, you know, when a new first then he's obviously going to have an opinion on the player, and you know, it's within everyone's best interest. Where possible, we try and get them in front of, and then all that goes into the decision making. But yeah, meetings happen every six weeks or so. We're honest and frank with the players about, you know, where we see their development and progression and what they need to work on, and it's continuously measured, it's continuously reviewed. So, yeah, I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, and the last one from Adam Mercer. Is there an emphasis on giving players second chances after being released from, say, Premier League academies?
Yes, it is it's something that we do. We do have a process in place where when a player gets released from another academy, we look at them. At the same time, we don't bring them straight into our groups because, like I said before, you know, there's a reason why they're getting released, and you know, we've got to maintain our own culture and identity. However, it's within everyone's best interest to make sure we're not passing an opportunity there. So yeah, we do look at players that get released. You know, if I use the current five boys that just signed their contracts, Ethan was previously at Crystal Palace, Quain Bartley was previously at Tottenham, Josh Hallard was previously at Brighton. So you got three out of the five there who were at some stage on the books of another academy. So yes, it is an emphasis, but it's not just because they've been released from another academy, they've got to come in type thing.
Okay, last question for me, because we're coming up to an hour. Me and Danny have one more question each. Is that okay, Michael?
Yeah.
Because we don't want to keep you too long, even though I could chat to you for hours, to be fair. My last question to you is, where do you see yourself and where do you see the academy going? Is there anything... Are you looking to...
That's possibly... my question. That's great. That's the same question.
Is it yours as well?
I was literally like, where is the academy? What's the next step? So you're on it.
Where's the next... do you see yourself doing a Robbo and becoming first team manager in a couple more years? Or where do you see yourself and where do you see the academy going? Sorry, Dan.
Gosh.
2 months.
No, so from the academy perspective, one thing we did, especially when the club got relegated and Robbo, you know, left the club, I thought it was important from my role to get everyone in and go, right, you know, we need to kind of realign where we're going, because there was a little bit of emotion and frustration and all of that and more. So we sat down and we realigned where we want to go and what success looks like over the next 3 years. And that process started in, April, May. And we're now at a place, having started our new season, where it's all being brought together and confirmed. So now our job is to make sure the staff that work under us from an academy management perspective is fully aware of what success looks like, and we've realigned our goals and objectives. And, you know, over the next 12, 36 and 36 months, you know, even 5, 10 years, you can't really look that far ahead, but what we're working towards is clear. And for myself, it's an interesting one, because if you go back years ago, I was a coach. I absolutely loved coaching. But the last 5 years, I've become, less on the grass and more, you know, in the office, you know, more strategic, more planning and organising. And, you know, I really enjoyed my time last year, because when James Oliver Pearce went up to the first team, I took over the 18s for the second part of the season. And I do love coaching, but naturally, when you're on the grass and your focus is there, you're taking your focus away from somewhere else. So it's a conversation I've been having over the last couple of months about, you know, where I see myself. Robbo was very hands-on. Robbo was on the grass. He was a coach. You know, that was his office.
Yeah.
Hence why, if you go back a few years ago, we had to restructure things, and, you know, his title had to be changed. I think I'm going.
Is there a lot of training, Mike, in there, by the way? When you're moving from the grass, because obviously the grass you do your training, to go sort of back of house, is there a whole host of other things that you've got to kind of learn, or is it just the things that you pick up along the way and then you decide how you want to do it? Because analysis must be mental, like the update and analysis, video analysis, statistical analysis. Then you've got, like, you know, I know Robbo spoke about player sort of doing almost like a behavior or a personality profile and stuff. It must be endless. And, you know, you've got people like Steve Salas talking about that, the set piece coaches. There must be so much. Do you have to learn all this, or is it a case of almost like opening up and, right, I've good coaches are magpies, they take bits and pieces of other people and they put it themselves. But was there a lot to learn, or was it just a case of implementing stuff that you've picked up along the way?
I think there's two sides to that question. So the first side is, I do think there's an element of you pick up bits along the way. So if you talk about psychology, you know, I think probably the best two psychologists in the Premiership at the moment are Klopp and Pep, right? You talk about Sir Alex Ferguson. He told me he wasn't a psychologist, so he might not be a qualified psychologist, but he had more of an impact than psychologists. So that's obviously been done by what they've picked up along the way and putting it together. And so there is an element of that. But in terms of what you've said about, you know, to training to transfer from the grass to in the office, about 12, 15 years ago, when the English FA and the Premier League were looking at the national team and why they kept failing, they started to put things in place to make sure that the development program in this country was right, because we as a nation put millions of pounds into our youth development program, a lot more than Spain, Germany, Italy. But at international level, we fell so far behind.
Yeah.
So about 12, 15 years ago, they said, right, we've got it right. We're putting a lot into the development program, and there's a lot into developing the players, but who's developing the people who are developing the players? So about 15 years ago, they had a bit of a revamp, and they started to look at, you know, they looked at their courses. They looked at being very specific with certain roles and the training they needed. So when I became head of coaching about 5 years ago, I was put on a personal development program that I had to do because it was part of my role. And every head of coach in the club had to do the same, where they looked at how I led people, how I pitched, what the strategy looked like, and how do you put that together, and what is planning. And, you know, if you're working towards objectives and goals, what does that look like? What are the processes? So you do get a lot of training. And that started to ramp up about 5-6 years ago in terms of head of coaching. And about 3 years ago, they've done the same with academy managers. So for the last 3 years, I've been studying. I've been studying. I've been with the Premier League, and you know, I've been very fortunate. You spent time with like Jason Wilcox, who's the academy manager at Man City.
Yeah, I remember that.
Nick Cox, man, you know, obviously different worlds, absolutely different worlds. But you know, you're around experts. They go, Mike, you know, you're strong in these areas, but we think you might need development in these areas. So, you know, it might be financial expertise, it might be leading others, it might be you're very good at leading downwards, but you're not influencing the club or managing upwards well enough. So they put a plan in place that is specific to your needs, and that's what I've been doing for the last 3 years. But that's all driven by the FA and Premier League, because 15 years ago they looked at it and said, we need to sort out our youth development program because we're falling short of these other nations.
No, I agree. Dan, you have any more questions for Michael?
No, it's really interesting. As I think the only thing I would echo, and having been at the game yesterday, there was so much unrest and upset about the game. And I was standing near the back with my dad, and I was literally standing there thinking, I'm not being funny, but some of these guys in 4 months ago were playing for Carshalton Athletic, you know, someone like David. Was it Hampton and Richmond, David Fisher, Jack people Curry like this, Jack Curry, Eastbourne, it's like, what do you genuinely expect these guys to do playing against 10 men in the chucking rain against, you know, a Mansfield team, someone like Nigel Clough, he's going to be organised. they spent a few bob. It was just like, what did you genuinely expect them to achieve in that condition? And why, I find it fascinating how as an academy, we not only are you sort of, not only are you a coach, but you're a mentor and a supporter, but ultimately trying to educate these boys who then become men to go, right, well, what we're going to do now is we're going to train you how to kick a ball and pass it. Or, by the way, now there's 25,000 people screaming at Arsenal, you've got to deal with this and you've got to deal with that. I just find it interesting hearing a little fraction of the story and getting a bit more information. I'm hoping will allow our fans in particular to have just to pause a moment when they slag off Magoma because he turns the wrong way, or when Curry, he got ruined yesterday, bless him, he's been great, but Jordan Bowery, who's an experienced pro, you know, he just did him over, which is going to happen. But hopefully perhaps they're going to, rather than going that's a negative, they might go, do you know what, he's going to learn a lot from that and actually use the 5-2 yesterday not to be toys out the pram, but do you know what, our young lads have learned a lot from that and they're going to get better for it. That's what I'm hoping this conversation will transmit out into the ether, if you like. So, Mike, thank you so much for coming. That was not just interesting, but it was really heartwarming to hear someone like yourself who's got these young lads' interests at heart. Forget Wimbledon, forget the crazy heights of millionaires. You're just a bloke who's in front of other lads who just wants the best for them. I think that's wonderful. So thank you very much for coming on. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, can I just... just on your last point, so about 3 years ago, we looked at our development program and we said we need to put a bit. We had we produced players. We had players representing national teams. We sold players, but we had never won any silverware. So about 3 years ago, we said, right, we need to start producing winners. We need to start producing players who don't like losing, but are used to winning. So when they do go into the first team, they take that winning mindset and they're able to positively influence the club. But what does winning look like? So it's exactly what you said. So we looked at our games program and said, you know what we need to start doing? We need to start putting them under, we need to start putting them in tournaments where they're playing under the lights. And
yeah, 100%.
They're out. You know, we do need to stop playing in front of 50 people on a Saturday morning and get them in front of 500-600 people on a Tuesday night when it's raining and stuff. So, yeah, what you may have seen is over the last couple of years, we've entered a lot more tournaments. We've put a lot more tariff on games and the mindset to win. Because, like you said, when they do go into the first team, the pressure's ramped up. And, you know, yeah, it's a whole new ball game. So it's our job to try and to strategically put bumps in the road so that they do fail, but they learn from it. And, yeah, I like to think, like you said, Jack Curry, what happened to him yesterday could be the best thing for him. And, you know, in 6 months' time, he'd be going, oh, look, he's kicked on again. And, like, yeah, it's only because he learned from that performance on the Tuesday night away to Mansfield. So this will all go. This will all be logged in his memory bank, and hopefully, will accumulate to better performances.
No, I totally agree. And again, Michael, I just echoed what Danny said. I really appreciate coming on and talking to us. As Danny said yesterday, Jack Curry, he had a bad game, but then we've got to remember that the game he had against experienced Gillingham, the game he went up to Hartlepool and rinsed their right back up there, and he got done yesterday. But then, 10 of our players yesterday, experienced pros that have been in the game for years, all got done yesterday. We had possibly one player that had a 7 out of 10. The rest of them were below that. That happens, and that's why you lose games 5-2. But then hopefully they'll all learn from it, and the management will learn from it, and we'll move on from that. And that's coming from what they've learned in your academy under your leadership and stuff like that they can then still do that. Look at Ayub. He's learned so much from last year.
Oh, my God, he's unrecognisable.
The other week against Gillingham in the Cup, if someone had kicked the ball at him, he'd have been jumping up and would have been in a gunner situation where he would have been getting sent off.
Yeah.
Every week not to use his aggression like Messi does. Use his aggression with his skill and just keep getting at the players. And then that's how you get it. But, Michael, I really appreciate coming on. Thanks very much.
No, thank you for having me, guys. And, let's catch up sometime in the future and have a little update.
Definitely. 100%.
Sounds amazing. Well done, Mike. That sounds awesome. Thanks, bud.
Take care.
Thank you very much. Cheers, Michael. Thank you very much. Danny, it was brilliant.
Yeah, like really, really good, wasn't it? Just to like listen to what he's saying and the way he goes about it. Do you know what the one thing is missing, I reckon? And I wonder whether there is something in this, you know. And I'm really pleased we're still recording, by the way. It's the fact that maybe Michael Hamilton educating our fans. And this might be, we spoke about the player and about the player and about the parents and stuff. You know what? I think there's a big, big amount where us as fans, and we're all guilty of it, but just understanding from this young person's point of view, when you put something on social media, this is the impact that it has. And you as a fan, this is what we could do from what we could benefit from you, I think would be a wicked piece of information.
People are going to be, one of my mates said to do this, I said, someone said something about one of the players and something. I said, well, I think we need to like lay off his back a bit. And then he said, that's a bit rich coming from you. You know me, I can get players' backs quite easy and stuff. But I think one thing we really need to do as fans is forget about what happened last season. Now, just forget that. It's a brand new season and a brand new management team. Do you know what I mean? I've seen some things, Ed, what's his name? The coach. Oh, what's his name? Tuvey. Rob Tuvey. People got to remember that Rob Tuvey's a Wimbledon fan through and through. He was at Sandhurst. His dad's been a Wimbledon fan since, remember, right? Didn't have a great season last year under Robbo's leadership and stuff like that. But that went on all on Rob, right? Rob's now under two new management and system management and wants to learn. We've got, last night, as I said, I think 10 players all have bad games. Yeah. I give Josh Davison the pass. Because
he's not Davison now. Yeah, you're definitely on Davison. Right. Yeah, you've seen the light.
Josh Davis, right? I felt he can have a pass. He scored two goals, looked lively, maybe NYC, but he had to go off. But the rest of them all had bad games. It will happen at League Two football. know what I mean? And people got to forget that last year happened. It's gone. We've won one game, we've drawn two, and we got battered last night.
Yeah,
but
we did.
That's gone now. Let's get beyond. This is the closest I think we can to having a good relationship with the players again. Do you know what I mean? I saw it at Hartlepool. We're all talking to them, laughing with them. We can't have that disconnect again this year because we'll struggle.
This is the key bit, which is really, really important to remember, is that we had Hudlin wasn't on the bench yesterday. I don't know the reason why. Woodyard's injured, and we lost Gunter, right? They're three of the first 15, 16. Apart from that, on that bench was just kids. Yeah. Just kids and Chislett. So we've got to, as a fan base, recognise, I know we all would like to go up and it's important, but just recognise that in this team and squad right now, on a squad base of 18 players, nine are probably under 21. And what would you genuinely expect from their first season? It's ridiculous.
And then three kids were coming on in really bad conditions.
Exactly.
Against, as you said, a Clough team, right? Who went 2-0 down and looked like they were going to get battered at one point, and then they literally stood up as men and done it. And it's hopefully JJ's seen this and gone, right, our squad is thin. I need to bring in a couple of players.
Oh, we're desperate.
We need to get rid of the deadwood and people that don't want to be here, like the Luke McCormick's. If you don't want to be here, go, right? We'll use your wages instead. I've heard rumours that Hudlin is injured. I've also heard rumours that Hudlin has been recalled. I don't know
really?
How true that is. Yeah,
I can't imagine that.
Someone said that he's got a groin injury, but then someone said he's been recalled as well. It depends on what injuries Huddersfield have got. Remember, if they've got a couple of injuries, they might be calling him back. They've not started great. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what I've heard. Hopefully not. But if he does go back, then that means we need to get another striker in.
Yeah, of course.
We've still got 2 weeks of the window. But I think we lost one game this year where we just capitulated. 10 players had a bad game. Get over it. Move on to Crawley. Let's go down to Crawley and beat. You going Crawley?
50-50 at the minute. I was supposed to be playing cricket. I'm definitely not playing cricket. So I'm hoping to.
I'm heading down there. I'm going to be
driving
down. The trains are screwed, so remember that, people. But yeah, I'm going to be heading down to Crawley.
No, I think that's it. I think what you just said is bang on. I think if we can all just try and remember that and I'll ultimately put aside the... I think the only thing I would say, Lee, which would be very, very interesting in the next 2 weeks, we're going to get money for McCormick. We've had money for Hartigan. We've had money from Nesta. We've had the Radoni money. Where that money's going to go, or where is it going to be reinvested in the squad, that's going to be, I think, on a lot of fans' lips and mouths and ears, if you like.
I agree, and I think
where that's going to go.
I think we can discuss that once the window's closed, and we'll have a better, like, if we then go out and buy Ronaldo, we can go, well, we know where the money's gone. If we buy no one, we can go, right, what is happening? And we can then ask that question. But I said, on a football front at the moment, against Doncaster, we absolutely battered them for 86 minutes of the game.
Yeah.
For 5 minutes, it cost us. But that's what happens when you're in League Two. People got to admit that 86 minutes, we were really good. Well, not 86 minutes, but the second half, we were really good. When that's
my old man said we were fantastic.
We were really good. But yeah, let's not worry about that. Right,
Well done for organising Mike coming on. That was
it. Was Michael? Michael contacted us and said, "Can he come?"
Oh, wow.
And we put out, we wanted to speak to anyone. We'd speak to anyone at the club. We will speak to anyone at the club.
Who would be the ideal person? I've got one guy that I'd love to put having this podcast, and that's Rocket.
I'd love Rocket. We'd probably better get Rocket. I know Rocket quite well.
I would love to have him on. I'm really interested in what
To speak to again. I'd love to get Robbo back on and speak to him and get a proper, full, open, honest interview with him.
Mate, that would be ridiculous.
Him have a go at me for being a bit of a prick last year, because I know he'd probably say that. But
we're open for people who have given their opinions across. If he wants to come on, we had
Matt on last week and it was brilliant. And that's where I got the idea of, let's get people on that, like, we're looking at ex-players, people that have been around the club and can give their honest views of what's happening. And fans don't always get the insights. As I said the other day, it's quiet sometimes. We don't always push, say, the women's team, the academy team as a club, not us. We always push it and then we get stick for it. But then hopefully we can do it. But we'll be back. Well, I'll be back on Sunday doing the Sunday debrief after the Crawley game, going through everything that's happened against Crawley. Me and Danny will be back next week. We don't know what we'll be discussing yet, Danny, but we'll sort that out.
Ask us to tell us what you want to discuss.
All right. Well, thanks very much, Dan, and I'll see you on Saturday.
Toodle pip.
Come on, you dunce.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Wombles Had a Dream podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Womble's Dream and on Facebook at The Womble's Had and Dream. Get involved. By the fans, for the fans.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.